As we begin the presentation, because the message is being broadcast on the internet, the slides also may be available at a later time. One housekeeping item I have to do in this information age is to give credit for the presentation. So just a note as well about this picture. It's taken from the International Space Station while it was traveling toward the sunrise. And the gentleman who took this picture is an astronaut by the name of Douglas H. Wheelock. So you can Google him on the internet and find many fascinating and beautiful photos. As well, the research for the presentation I'm going to present today comes from multiple sources. A man by the name of Dr. Joby Martin, Dr. Gary Parker, Tiffany Lee, who's of no relation. She's an MIT student, so that should be easy to understand. Thomas F. Hines, periodical The New Scientist, Discovery of Design, Creation Research Society Quarterly, Encyclopedia Britannica, and the Creation Crusade. And all the audio and sound pictures I have in here are available in the public domain. So we have to do that because of a thing called copyright infringement. So I just want to state that. And there's actually a thing here, Section 107 of the Copyright Act, that says that allowances made for fair use for purposes such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, and research. So that's out of the way. So now, this is my third presentation I've done for the children. Madison and Jacob have been at all three. This is, I think, Zane and Matilda's first one. And John alluded to it. Why do we do these presentations? Well, at the end of the day, it's because not only are the children precious, but your minds are precious. And it's very important to understand that God and His creation are not only real in the sense that you see them around you, but they have much value. And I like to start here. And believe it or not, there's only two scriptures in this message, and this is the first one. Job 12, verses 7 through 10. And I played a little with the animation. Verse 7 reads, "But ask the animals what they think. Let them teach you. Let the birds tell you what's going on. Put your ear to the earth. Learn the basics. Listen. The fish in the ocean will tell you their stories. Isn't it clear that they all know and agree that God is sovereign, that He holds all things in His hand? Every living soul, yes, every breathing creature." So according to the theory of evolution, every step up from a single cell organism becomes more complex, gradually accumulating all these changes that have come about through what they deem as errors in copying the information, which is the DNA. And that directs the construction of living things. These errors, we're told and taught, and it's written in textbooks, are called mutations. Mutations are claimed by evolutionists to have come about by an accident. What this means is that there was no intelligent direction or design by God. The reality is that the errors in copying the information... Can we get that light turned on in there? Hard on the notes. In copying the information, in fact, they don't make better instructions for making more complex beings. This is impossible and illogical. They believe, evolutionists that is, that over millions of years, natural selection has selected the organisms with mutations, and they add a little bit to the creature's ability. These mutations, they add a little bit to the creature's ability to survive and leave offspring, and while those with harmful mutations die. Apparently, these changes have taken millions of years to occur, but almost all mutations are in fact harmful. So the organisms which survive generally with these slight mutations, and it's as simple as they say, just changing one amino acid within one protein. The truth is, evolution is actually a belief system too. In fact, it is only a theory. and that it doesn't that does its best to explain life without a creator. However, to believe in evolution takes more faith than it does to believe in God. Now you guys all know who that is, right? Well, you're all too young to probably know who that is. That was Woody Woodpecker, as it said. And I grew up on that. He was a cartoon when I was a kid. But believe it or not, he doesn't actually represent a single species of woodpecker. And there are over 200 of them, by the way. And they're one of the most interesting types of birds that can be found all around the globe, except in places like Australia, New Zealand, and Madagascar. They live in forests and backyards and various other types of habitat where trees are available, and several species of woodpeckers are endangered. So we're going to focus today primarily on what's called the pileated woodpecker, which is found here in North America. And in fact, three of these guys are neighbors to Rob and Kim. I saw them across their house when we helped them move in. We're going to simply start from the ground up. And we're going to begin at the foot of the woodpecker and work our way up to his head. And so most birds that you see out on trees, they actually have three toes in the front and one toe out the back. But the woodpecker, as you can see by that foot, has actually two toes in the front and two toes in the back. And there's a fancy term for this. It's called zygodactyl, which doesn't mean a lot, but it just means he's got these two rear toes. And that outer rear toe at the back is a very amazing toe, as you can see the difference in length. Well, the big toe gives him, the woodpecker, or her, it's a female woodpecker, the amazing ability and flexibility to, when they climb the tree, they can rotate at any angle, 360 degrees around, to peck at a hole. It doesn't matter. But that toe is so flexible, it enables him to do that. The toe structure and the associated tendons and leg muscles form a what's called a functional complex of features, enabling the woodpecker to climb the trunk and maintain its position while it's pecking the tree. And here's a woodpecker sitting on a tree, but there's something I want you to focus on. There we go. I highlighted his tail. Now, he has the most amazing tail out of any bird that exists. And if you think about it, and we're going to look at it closer, his ability to peck a hole, the force it requires to peck through bark and into a tree takes a lot of force. So when pecking, what he does is he places their tail against the tree, and they're stiffer and stronger than most tails, and he has the ability to fan them out. So it acts as a brace. So in this way, his feet and tail form an effective tripod, like a camera, or this microphone stand is a tripod, to cause stability so he can stabilize as he's hammering into that wood. Okay, so now you're seeing the skull of the woodpecker. And this is when things get really interesting and complex. You're seeing small, flexible bones. And you can see where it says number two. They're actually rooted. These two bones are rooted in the right nostril of the woodpecker. They actually circle around the back of his head and his neck and then it comes out through his neck into his mouth. What were these strange bones? Well, quite a number of animals have bones that stiffen at the base of the tongue. And essentially, the purpose of these bones are for the tongue of the woodpecker. Okay, and they're called hyoid bones. But if you actually stop for a second and think, the fact that the tongue starts out in the nostril, the right nostril, and goes up and around the back of the head is exceptional. That's an exceptional thing to think about. Now, something or somebody gave the woodpecker's tongue this unique design. Instead of it dangling around and getting caught in the branches when he flies, the slack of his tongue is kept under loose skin behind its neck, and back there, there's tiny bones that divide essentially into two tongues. They come back together before entering the beak. This design detail no doubt gives greater accuracy as the woodpecker guides its tongue toward its target grub. So right where you see the little number one, there's actually five bones there with tiny flexible joints. And what made them exit through the right nostril and attach in their sheath there? What made that bone go through that nostril around the back of the head and come back behind the head and then in through the mouth and then between the two halves of the beak? There you go. Most birds have a tongue that extends to the length of the beak. Not a woodpecker. A woodpecker's tongue can extend out as much as 10 inches past its beak, depending on the species. And the purpose of that tongue extending is to get that food inside the tree. We're going to get to that in a bit. Now, amazingly, that tongue has barbs on the end of it to get the insect out of the tree. And those barbs point backwards. So when it goes in and it pierces that grub, it can't come out. They fan out, so it pulls it. It's like a corkscrew. He's gonna pull them right out of the tree. And he literally has to stab the larva because it doesn't want to come out. It's in its home and then it's in the tree. But in case that's not enough, in case those barbs are not enough, guess what else he has on his tongue? A glue factory. But amazingly, this glue factory, it's actually in his tongue, and it's designed to stick to the bug and not to his beak. Now, if evolution were true, this bird would have died because he would have swallowed his tongue while swallowing the bug. Right? Because it's glued. How's he going to get that bug off the end of his tongue if it's glued there? He'd have to swallow the whole tongue to get it down. Its tongue is long and slender, and it's used to probe these tunnels for insects. And the tip is like a spearhead, I said, with a number of barbs or hairs pointing rearward. This facilitates the securing of the insect while transporting it to its beak. And now when he brings the bug into his mouth, he has another factory. The second factory produces the solvent to dissolve the glue so that he doesn't actually swallow the bug with his tongue. So how does he get around this since the glue does not stick to his beak? Well, he has another factory, again, that produces the solvent. So this is what happens. Spears the bug with glue in his barbs, sucks it into his mouth. He dissolves the glue, which then loosens up the bug, and then he swallows it. God made him that way. So even if a simple organ like a tongue, which is made up of many proteins, nerve cells, blood vessels, etc., it must be perfectly coordinated. And it's very difficult to imagine that a single change in one amino acid inside one protein is going to bring any organ into existence, let alone to bring that into existence. Why? Again, almost all mutations are harmful. What happens why is there not a cluster of 1,000 mutations that happen at once? And one of them was helpful. Or hundreds of them would actually end up causing genetic diseases, which would then wipe out the organism. Insisting that God did nothing and that accidental mutations have produced everything, evolutionists have in fact backed themselves into a corner. because they cannot explain any complex organ. Evolutionists surmise that a woodpecker must have evolved from some other bird that had a normal tongue first. Let's think about that for a second. So the mutation scenario had to happen. But however, how could it have ever evolved from a normal bird's tongue into the woodpecker tongue? After a normal bird's tongue has turned around and started growing under the skin to the back of its head, the tongue would have been completely useless. Until it had completed that circle around the back of the head. And that's only the last step in the evolution of the woodpecker's tongue when it came out the front of the beak before it would have survival value. So after that tongue decided it was going to go through that nostril, right nostril, go back around its head, split into two tongues, come back and come out the mouth, it was at a complete disadvantage until that tongue was long enough for it to actually be used. I don't know about you, but if you tried to sit down and eat and you didn't have a tongue, it'd be very difficult. So since this involved bone, joints, blood vessels, nerves, as well as flesh, it would have required many mutations. And presumably, evolutionists will tell you this was spread out over millions of years. Its tongue could not help it catch any food at all for millions of years. Again, it all started in their eyes with one change of one amino acid in one protein. The truth is, that's totally impossible. The woodpecker's tongue must have come all at once, a product of a complex design. This would have required an intelligent creator, and if the woodpecker's tongue were not designed, but had formed by chance mutation, only the first mutations would have moved its tongue into its right nostril and pointed it backward. After that, the reality is that bird would have starved to death. But evolutionists tell us that an organ which goes unused for a generation after generation, guess what happens to that organ? It gets eliminated by natural selection because it's no longer useful. Even if that animal continues to live. But if by some miracle the woodpeckers themselves had not been eliminated, a tongue which had been useless for many generations, itself it would have been eliminated. So the woodpecker's tongue gives strong evidence of being the product of an intelligent design and creation rather than evolution. And some evolutionists have realized this, and what do? They have to find another story to make the evidence fit. Then God does something even more amazing. This bird is the most unique bird in the world, and he's a woodpecker. He's the European green woodpecker. Well, guess what this guy has? His tongue is different than any other woodpecker. He's unique among woodpeckers. His tongue starts in his throat, goes back around his head and out his beak. How does that evolve? When evidence is presented that contradicts evolutionary science, that evidence is ignored. They don't print that in the textbooks. It leads to the question of creator versus natural selection, and when the evidence again presented flies in the face of evolutionary science, the scientists ignore the information so they don't have to think about God. And in our education system, again, this information is excluded. Right? Why present something they have to try and explain away? Okay. Now, there's a hole very similar to this at Hamilton's Marsh, which is just outside Qualicum. And had we had more time, I might have went there and took a picture of it, but I found this one on the internet. So a woodpecker's bill is a very specialized chisel, capable of slicing right into a tree. By hammering on a steel chisel, men can cut into trees like the woodpecker does with his bill. However, when we use a hammer and a chisel, the steel blade of the chisel becomes dull. After a certain number of holes that would be chiseled, a man would have to stop, sharpen his chisel, and begin again. Otherwise, they'll continue to get dull to the point of being unusable. God made the woodpecker's beak to be self-sharpening. If it were a simple thing that could happen by a small accidental changes, some blacksmith or metallurgical scientist would have figured out how to make self-sharpening chisels, right? Why not go after them and try and learn them? Actually, I chose this picture for many reasons. The first one is, if you've ever seen Granddad or Uncle John in the morning, that's what he looks like before coffee. But it actually was chosen for a specific reason. I'm giving you a straight-on view of his beak. That was the purpose. His beak is industrial strength. Not only is it self-sharpening, but it's industrial strength. And between his beak and his skull, there's a piece of cartilage. Behind his beak is a shock absorber. And he has, believe it or not, per body weight, his skull is the thickest of any creature in the animal kingdom. Woodpeckers don't get headaches from pecking. They have reinforced skulls that are structured in such a way that they spread out the impact of the force. And their brains are tightly cushioned and protected in their skull. And when a woodpecker slams its head into a tree, the deceleration, so that's the slowing down of when he hits, and we'll get to the exact figure in a bit here, but it's many times gravity. The nerve and the muscle coordination must produce a dead-on hit. If it did not, if he slipped off to one side, to the left or the right, he'd basically rip the cover right off his brain, and he could literally break his neck. Woodpeckers, when they open their eyes between each peck. So, think about this. Between each peck, he opens his eyes, he focuses, aims where he's going to go with his beak, closes his eyes, and then hits the tree. Now, a woodpecker is able to peck 22 times per second. Okay? Okay, again, between each peck, he opens his eyes, he focuses, aims the beak, closes his eyes, and hits the tree. So you heard, he just did that, and is able to do that 22 times per second. Why? Why does he go through opening, focusing, aiming, and closing before he hits the tree? Well, they used to think that he actually closed his eyes only to keep the wood chips out of his eyes. Well, scientists have in fact measured that the force of the impact of the woodpecker's beak hitting the tree, that the force is so great that if he didn't close his eyes, he'd pop his eyeballs right out of his sockets. And as the man who was interviewed, his name was Joby Martin, he remarked, "Have you ever seen a blind woodpecker?" They never miss. And I want to read a quote from a gentleman, and he's a creation scientist. His name's Gary Parker. He says, "But if the woodpecker were put together by time and chance, without any planning ahead, which part came first? Suppose just by chance a baby bird is born with a tough bill. It decides to try it out. Whack! It throws its head into a tree. The bill is just fine, but it squishes in the front of his face. One dead bird. End of the evolutionary story. But maybe I got it backwards," he says. "Maybe just by chance a baby bird was born with a heavy-duty skull. Whack! Throws its head into a tree. This time the skull is okay, but its bill folds up like an accordion. There's no evolutionary future in that either. In fact, neither the tough bill nor the heavy-duty skull would have any functional survival value until both occurred together, along with the shock-absorbing tissue, nerve and muscle coordination. That's no problem if the woodpecker were put together by a plan, purpose, and a special act of creation. We expect drilling tools created by people to have interdependent parts that all must be completely assembled before the machine works. That's just good sense and good science. We would surely expect no less from the perfect devices created by God. If a man were trying to catch grubs like a woodpecker, no matter how sharp his chisel is, he would not know which direction to go and to connect with the tunnels which the grubs are in. So the grubs inside the tree, they make tunnels through the tree. Well, the woodpecker has to figure out which tunnel he's in and how does he get to the tunnel that actually has the woodpecker. So, believe it or not, until the woodpecker had obtained the complex mechanism for locating and hitting a tiny grub inside a tiny tunnel, inside a great big tree, its specialized tongue would have been of no value. Neither would the bug location mechanism been of any value without a tongue that's long enough to reach the grub. In fact, neither the long tongue nor the location mechanism would have been any use if the tongue were not equipped to stick to or into the grub and bring it back out to the hole. If any of the three had evolved much before the others, it would have been of no use and would not have been selected by evolution. If all of the above systems came into place in an ordinary bird, the impact with the tree would kill it. Something like driving a steel chisel into a tree by the end of your nose. Had it survived the first blow, it probably would have quit trying. The woodpecker, however, not only comes equipped with a strong self-sharpening beak and a grub detector, but also a marvelous shock-absorbing system that protects its head from damage. The first woodpecker to evolve the equipment for drilling holes in trees would have quit pounding or died young if the shock absorbers were not already in place. So all these mechanisms all had to be together at the very same time for this woodpecker. Now we read Job 12, where it said, "Look to the animals and let them teach you." Well, here's a real article from a real scientist periodical called The New Scientist. And look at that headline. It says, "Woodpecker's head inspires shock absorbers." So here we go. God's word is true. What God said is true, and man is going to learn from it. So one important point would be for science, honestly, to acknowledge your creator. And I've often wondered myself, how much more knowledge would we have if we as humans rightly acknowledged our creator? How much more would God give us? And as Bill said the other day, God doesn't want to hide stuff from us. He wants to bless us with this type of understanding. So how is a woodpecker able to drill holes into a tree without getting a concussion or at least a severe headache? The bird's beak drums on a tree up to 22 times a second, giving a deceleration up to 1,200 G's. Now, what does 1,200 G's mean? Well, if you're in the launch of the space shuttle, and if you've ever seen any launches, they get thrown back into their padded chairs. Well, that launch is between 3 to 6 G's of gravity. A jet pilot, when he's doing his fancy turns and maneuvers, can feel up between 9 to 12 G's of force. A short duration is important to safety, and on a higher scale, forces of 50 G or greater may prove to be fatal for human beings. The result is loss of vision, blood circulation, and damage to blood vessels in the brain. So that's when you start to get at 50 G's. Again, his deceleration is 1,200 G's. Researchers at the University of California at Berkeley identified 4 design safety features to protect the brain of the woodpecker. So again, this is based on this article. First, the beak is strong and solid, yet amazingly, it's also flexible. Secondly, the elastic layer supports the tongue, which itself stretches around the skull, and that's all beneath the skin. Third, there's a thin fluid space between the skull and the brain, which minimizes the transfer of vibrations. And fourth, the spongy bone that it has in its beak separates the woodpecker beak from the brain, and that sponginess actually dampens the forces of impact. So these, as it said, the 4 majority safety features of the woodpecker have been utilized in the design of high-impact products, including crash helmets, flight data recorders, and the 4 components include an outer metal enclosure. So this is this here. This is what they designed. Okay. So there are 4 components modeled after the woodpecker's components were an outer metal enclosure, a layer of rubber shock absorber, a second layer of protective metal, and a final layer of tightly packed glass beads in the middle there. So what did they do? They inserted sensitive microelectronics into this shock absorber thing they created. And they took it and they fired it at a wall. So they had this tube with the sensitive electronics in it. They fired it at the wall with the force of 60,000 G's. Right? So I don't know how many times that is. Many, many times over even what the woodpecker has. And to their surprise, the electronics survived undamaged. So all of God's creatures clearly display planning and practical design, including the woodpecker. And consider the design features here next time you tap on a tree. Maybe you can try and go use your nose on a tree at Stamp Falls today. See how that feels. And this is just a map of North America. And as you can see, all the way from down in, actually in Oregon. Is that California? Yeah, that's Oregon. Is that California? California. So down into California, up where we are on Vancouver Island, clear across Canada, and then down all the way to Florida. So you'll be able to see that he's a permanent resident. And one, I hope, as a result of this presentation, will give you a greater appreciation. And hopefully the next time you see him, you'll take pause and you watch him, you'll appreciate the great God and his creative genius. Again, another picture from this. We'll conclude with this verse. Revelation 4, verse 11. You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they exist and were created. What good would the stiff tail feathers, the specialized toe structure, the grub detector, and the grub puller have been even with the wraparound tongue? And the shock absorber, if drilling a few holes, the beak had gotten dull and wouldn't cut anymore. When a number of systems must be in place all at once before a thing will work, it's called irreducible complexity. And it's evidence of a creator. According to the evolutionary theory, any system without any function will be eliminated by natural selection. If one of the woodpecker systems evolved much before the other systems had been there for it to function, it would have been eliminated. So the evidence strongly suggests against the woodpecker's special systems being developed over millions of years by chance mutations. Since the evidence indicates that the woodpeckers could not have been developed by random mutations, why should mutations be considered as the universal builders of every part of every being, as most evolutionists insist? Is it okay to believe that things were caused by mutations when there's good evidence that leads to this conclusion? Most genetic diseases are examples. A slight change in the order of amino acids in a protein will often change a functioning protein into a disease. But let the evidence be the guide. Also in cases such as the woodpecker, let evidence be a guide also in cases such as that of a woodpecker where the evidence so strongly indicates intelligent design, they call it, or we'll just say God as a creator. Why jump to the conclusion that if mutations cause diabetes, they must have also formed the pancreas, the liver, the fish, the monkey, and us? Unfortunately for many, the evolutionary faith is part of a total religious structure in which everything must be jammed into it, whether it fits or not. It has been said by a gentleman named Dr. Sutherland, the woodpecker's skull has been more effective in convincing scientists of the inadequacies of the evolution theory than perhaps any book in the author's library. And one prominent evolutionist on the staff of a prestigious scientific magazine confided after examining the woodpecker's bill, there are certain anatomical features which just cannot be explained by gradual mutations over millions of years. Just between you and me, he said, I have to get God into the act too sometimes. Another scientist, while examining the woodpecker's tongue's bones under a microscope, commented, it's very easy to tell the difference between man-made and God-made objects. The more you magnify man-made objects, the cruder they look. But the more you magnify God-made objects, the more precise and intricate they appear. Oh, and we're going to have one final piece of special music. And the song is entitled The Words I Would Say. It's specific.